Today's special guest, Louis Navalier, head of Navalier and Associates. Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Start off today with the U.S. equities markets this year. You called for a bottom, I think it was, a few months ago, and we've certainly seen that.
Well, I think it's just, to be honest with you, it's just seasonality. Markets are seasonally weak in the late summertime. We had a correction in August. Let's just, for lack of a better word, call that the summer shenanigans. We tried to retest those lows multiple times. And now we're finally in the seasonally strong time of year. Markets tend to firm up late in the year and in the new year. A lot of that has to do with the pension funding late in the year and more pension funding in the new year. Really have some really bad leadership. And I'll give you an example. In October, the energy stocks were leading the way, the ConocoPhillips, the Occidental Petroleums. These are all stocks with very high dividend yields. Looks like people were buying dividend ETFs, not looking at where the dividends were coming from. So we think that was a short covering rally. Then in November, you had a lot of froth, Netflix, Amazon, very high price stocks, very high P stocks with ridiculous multiples. And so that was a little scary. And then in December, we've seen the creme de la creme rise. We've seen things with good sales and earnings be rewarded, like a Kroger, a Costco, a Palo Alto Networks. So that makes us feel really good. AutoZone just came out today with some good results. So that helps a lot. But we're in a shockingly narrow market, and we have very strong currency. The dollar is amazingly strong, and it's about going to continue to destroy corporate profits. S&P sales have been negative all this year. They'll be negative in the fourth quarter. Earnings were negative in the third quarter. They'll be negative in the fourth quarter. There are a lot of stock buybacks, so the first two quarters earnings were positive. But it's a pretty narrow market environment. Oh, and manufacturing's in a recession. Even though we got a strong auto sector. And it's just a strong dollar destroying the Caterpillars and other exporters. So, and the commodity prices are down, so that hurts our exports of ag and energy. It's a very narrow market environment. We're telling people they got to be in the top 11% of the dividend stocks and top 14% of other stocks.
So you talk about a strong dollar and weak commodities. So that's going to hurt S&P 500, right? Because our energy sector has certainly been under pressure for the better part of 12 months now. And I think you may have seen today that crude oil dropped well below 40. I think it was 37 and changed. Plus, you talk about the greenback strengthening. And you really wonder, is it really the greenback strengthening or is it, you know, the euro weakening and the yen weakening? I mean, obviously, their money presses have been running around the clock just as we're preparing for at least a quarter point rate hike with, what, about 80% odds now in the next couple of weeks. In other words, will we see new highs in the S&P 500 in 2016?
You may, but it'll be a seasonal blip. The strength of the S&P is it yields over 2.1%. It is tax advantage at 23.8. That's the max federal tax on qualified dividends. My fear is that some of the big dividend stocks will cut the dividend. Then that party's over. My other fear is the economy's just not balanced. But what's causing the strong currency is, as you mentioned, it's excessive money pumping by the Bank of Japan and the European Central Bank. And not only is there money pumping, they got negative rates. Apparently, when you issue too much debt, you can't pay interest, so you have to have negative rates. So Europe just lowered their rates to minus 0.3%. It's making foreigners pour into America, buy, you know, our real estate. They're buying collector cars. They're buying art. I mean, negative rates really freak people out, and that's what's freaking Europe out. And we have positive rates over here. And so what's happening is money's just flowing here, chasing our stronger economy and our higher rates. But in the end, it's going to undermine our Fed policy and put downward pressure on everything. And finally, the strong dollar pushes commodity prices down. You know, we really have a deflationary environment here. The Fed keeps saying inflation is going to materialize. I mean, the Fed can't find the barn, let alone hit the broad side of the barn on their inflation forecasts. But they are going to raise rates in December. It's called normalization. They want to have a tool down the road. And so that's fine. Market rates have since gone up, so that's not a big deal. The Fed will not be raising rates at all in 2016. It's the more they raise rates, the more that wealth gap in America gets wider and wider, and they don't want to be part of that political debate.
Then you're really not as rosy, the outlook at least.
The strength that we're going to have next year is the election cycle. You can't become president of the United States unless you're a happy, positive person. We'll have fewer candidates soon, and they'll all run around sucking up to each other. And I realize we might have a national security theme, so there'll be more fear. But normally elections are good for the market because they all run around and tell everybody what they want to hear. And then we elect somebody and say, why did we elect that person? Okay. So if history repeats, 2016 will be a positive year. But the truth of the matter is the dollar is really doing a number on our economy. You know, 48% of the S&P sales are outside of America. There's one other thing I should mention, and again, I'm a positive person. I'm not a negative person. The big news wasn't the correction we had in the late summer. The big news is what happened to the ETF industry. You see, on August 20, well, first, a couple things happened to the ETF industry. First, in early August, Stanford, UCLA, it said ETFs are more expensive to buy and sell in stocks. And that surprised a lot of people because a lot of people didn't realize they were paying spreads to specialists on the exchange to buy and sell their ETFs. But, you know, when they're reasonable, no one cares. But on August 24th, something really bad happened. A lot of big ETFs traded at a 30% discount to the underlying basket of stocks. And these weren't just any ETF. This was the iShares Dividend ETF. That's DVY. That's the Guggenheim S&P Equal ETF, over $10 billion. That was big Vanguard sector ETFs. And then everybody's saying, what do you mean my ETF trades at a discount like a closed-end fund? Not only that, they can trade at premiums. And a lot of ETFs had a 40% range August 24th. So the SEC is going to have hearings next year exposing all this. And what a lot of investors don't realize is ETFs are a transaction model. They get rewarded by their turnover. So when you buy an equally weighted ETF, they're rebalancing that every 90 days. And their specialist affiliate might, you know, have 240, 320% of your turnover, and they might make 4% just trading your stocks. Wall Street has invented something called robo-advisors, where there's no management fee. That's true. But if you read the disclosure, the ETFs are paying $250,000 a year to be in these programs. Why? Because they make money on the rebalancing. So it's all being exposed now that the ETFs were just a way to trick people to get paid under the table. And it's not funny anymore, you know? And it's hit the SEC, and it's hit iShares, Vanguard, S&P type ETFs. And this is bad for the market's credibility because this is 40% of the volume out there. I don't know how serious these ETF hearings will be by the SEC.
What is going to be as appealing as equities? Because you earn so little money at the bank, as you mentioned, negative rates in Europe, but there's very little alternative as far as rates are concerned out there. You have a pretty solid dividend coming from the S&P 500. What alternatives will be available?
You know, even though I'm a stock guy, I have a $2 billion a year bond business. We buy bonds and sell them to banks and brokerage firms. We do them in UITs. That's a good way to buy bonds because you don't have any, you know, what we call transaction risk. Your danger is if you buy bonds in an ETF or a mutual fund and it gets hit with redemptions, they could be forced to sell when no one's around. And bonds have spreads, and it could really do a number on the return. So bonds are meant to be bought ladder to hold to maturity, and so we have a big business doing that. The only problem is I get about a 4.6% yield in BBB corporates, but it's fully taxed at 43.4%. So for people in higher tax brackets, we do think dividends are better, and we have multiple dividend management programs. But the best one, in my opinion, is something called Power Dividend, where we double the dividends every 6 to 7 years. The companies are doubling the dividends, so you get a good dividend return plus growth. And these would be stocks like a Clorox, a Lockheed Martin. So you only get about a 3.3% dividend yield, a tax advantage of 23.8%, but then you have capital appreciation potential. What I especially like about it, when the markets got very nervous, this thing got firmed up. So we like to mix our power dividend portfolio with our conservative growth portfolios. You know, in our normal large cap growth portfolio, you know, I have 12% sales growth next quarter. I'm going to have over 20% earnings growth. S&P is going to be negative. I'm only trading at barely 16 times forecasted earnings. So I have good sales and earnings, but the market doesn't. So, you know, I still think my quality growth stocks will remain an oasis. I do have to be more domestic now to get away from all the problems with the multinationals. And so, you know, domestic is like a Kroger or a Southwest Airlines. God, we got lots of retail. It's Ultra Salon Fragrances, Lowe's, Home Depot, Costco would be another one. You know, so I have to be more domestic. And so we like to mix our conservative growth stocks with the dividend, with the powerful dividend stocks. And I think that's a good 1-2 punch and blended together that will give people a pretty steady return. But it is very, very scary out there to be an investor nowadays. It's Wall Street's under scrutiny because of the ETF pricing scandals this year. There's going to be regulatory investigations. The best thing about the market is the dividend yield and the buybacks. That should continue next year.
Let's say 3 to 5 years from now, will we see the Dow up another 50, 100%, or should people be manning the life rafts?
Well, I think people are losing confidence in the central banks. So I think, you know, they might want to up their gold allocation. If you're in Europe and you bought some gold, you made money. But if you bought it in America, you're just treading water. So the weaker your central bank, the weaker your currency, the more you want to own gold. Let's say you have a 6% gold allocation. Maybe you want to take it to 6% to 9%. So that's one safety valve. I think the other safety valve is just having your best defense, strong offense, having very good companies. America's going to be fine long-term because we have foreign capital pouring in here. We have a lot of people with money coming to America, and we just have to cheer up. And we're a more optimistic society, but we have to remain happy and go out and spend money. And there's something called the velocity of money, how fast money changes hands. And hopefully we'll have that moving forward. It's you know, we've had a very divisive society, and it's just time for everybody to cheer up and try to make the country better. And we have a lot of wealthy immigrants coming in, whether it's the Chinese immigrants, the European, Russian immigrants. You know, in America, you get assimilated and you prosper. So, but that capital pouring in America is a big deal. So I'm not worried at all. I think we'll be fine. It's just I want to be in wherever the strength is. You know, I'm a manager, and I have to have earnings every quarter. So as long as I have earnings, I'll be happy. That silver lining oasis is very, very clear out there. But there are bubbles out there. You know, I won't buy an Amazon at 965 times earnings. I will buy a Gilead, a big company, at 9 times earnings. I have growth at a reasonable price versus growth at a bubble price.
I'm sure you'll agree that real estate has been moving nearly in lockstep with the U.S. equities markets now for several years. Do you see any signs of a top for the typical median home price in the U.S.?
You know, I have some home builders in the portfolios. And I have home builders because there's tight inventory out there. So I'm not too worried about that. You know, the financing still is going to be pretty lucrative. Financials institutions are actually one of the areas of growth right now. So I'm not too worried about that. And that is a big part of consumer sentiment, is having home prices go up. So, and consumers have largely been happy because their wages are finally starting to go up. That's one reason the Fed's going to raise rates. Their homes are steadily appreciating, and now they got more money in their pocket because of lower gas prices. So, you know, we're getting there. It's just not a balanced economy right now. Obviously, if you live in Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, there's a problem in the energy patch. If you live in Peoria, there's a problem with Caterpillar, you know, because of the strong dollar. I could say the same thing about parts of Wisconsin that have a lot of manufacturing and exports. Same thing Cleveland, where all the steel pipe comes from. So, you know, we're just not hitting on all cylinders right now. You know, overall, you know, we're going to be growing.
And you also mentioned that the gold market, you know, after several difficult years here, might be a buying opportunity. And we've also seen the precious metal sector perk up substantially in the last few weeks. Do you see this as a potential theme or trend?
I think it's a trend because we go into the holidays and a lot of people want to give their kids gold coins and things like that. As you know, there's a gold coin shortage out there. So the demand exceeds the supply. But I think, and you know, you have the Indian wedding season and a lot of cultural things going on. But I think as rates get more and more negative, if I lived in Europe, if I lived in Japan, I'd be having a lot of metals right now. Just because I don't have confidence in putting my money in the bank and having a negative yield. So it really does undermine things. Gold is a cultural monetary tool. It's been around for thousands of years, and I think when times get uncertain, people gravitate towards it, and so I think this price should be very firm. Of all the commodities, that is the firmest out there right now.
Certainly suffered substantially, and many of the other commodities seem to be making up for lost time, and crude oil as well. Any final thoughts then on black gold? Do you see as low as $20 a barrel for West Texas intermediate crude?
I hope not, but I will tell you that oil is seasonal. It goes down in the fall. We're in the fall now, so the demand's low, and then it goes up in the spring. So we're always going to have these gyrations. But what's really freaking oil out is they didn't cap the wells in America like everybody expected. And there's no reason to cap. It's on leased land. It only costs $5 to $15 to get out of the ground. The only place that's expensive is North Dakota because of transportation costs. So if anything gets capped, it'll be there. We have a huge Gulf production coming on from the majors next year. So the glut's going to get bigger. The limits are off on OPEC, so they're pumping more than ever. So it's really gotten to be very, very interesting out there. I do expect gold to go up in the spring, but I mean not gold, but oil to go up in the spring. But I seasonal demand picks up, but it's like this year we're making a new low, 7-year low, and I'm not sure our high next year is going to be as high as it was last year. So I think people just have to get used to this lower reduced range for a while. So it's a big dividend. But we don't want to see it take out certain parts of our economy in certain regions and states.
You'd agree there's a dollar component factor at play here as well?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The stronger the dollar gets, the more any commodity goes down in price. Again, gold's been the most resilient, but you know the price of wheat, corn, soybeans, food, it all goes lower as the dollar goes higher and higher. And it's actually helped India. India spends a lot of money on food and energy, and they spend less, so they got more disposable income. That's why they're the strongest economy in the world right now. But it's very interesting. Another thing we've got to watch is China. You know, China's not exporting what they used to. There's a lot of concerns around the world, and then we have to watch all this terror stuff. If the terror stuff hurts travel and commerce, then there goes the economic growth. I don't think we're quite there yet. You want to make sure this doesn't spread, and hopefully we'll get a handle on that. That's just another wild card out there.
Please tell folks more about Navalier & Associates as well as any other services you'd like to outline today.
Well, our big thing is have free databases in the public domain. We have a dividend grader and the top 11% of the best. We have a stock grader. Wrote a book on that. We grade stocks A, B, C, D, F, top 14% of the best. We have an ETF grader, grade ETFs. So we give a lot of our research free in the public domain. We have a free service called Market Mail. And that's all at Navalier.com, and then NavalierGrowth.com is my newsletter site if you want to get my newsletters, and there's free databases on that site too.
Well, as Gold Seek Radio is wrapping up our 10th year here, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays, and look forward to having you on back on the show in 2016.
Thanks. Take care.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.